Oh, maybe we should write that down somewhere. I'm certain I'll forget the minute I get a drink in me. Two drinks, a whole bottle. She huffed out a short breath. It's weird that Jane was worried about them. These girls usually don't worry about anything but keeping their pimps happy. Three used toothbrushes in the glass. The long, dark hair clumped in one of the combs. Amanda said, "Jane's hair is blonde." "I wouldn't bet on that." Evelyn looked down at the unmoving man. "His wallet's in his back pocket. Could you—"
"No!"
The panic came back in full force. "You're right. Never mind. They'll ID him at the jail. I'm sure he has a record." "Hey, Linda." Evelyn's voice wavered as she spoke into the phone. 1016, my location. Hodge sent us in on a 49 and it turned into a 55. She looked at Amanda. "Anything else?"
"Tell them you're 24,
Amanda managed. Duke Wagner was wrong about Evelyn Mitchell being pushy and opinionated. The woman was just plain crazy. 5. Present Day. Susanna Ford. Zanna fell back on the bed, her feet still on the floor. She held up her iPhone and checked her messages. No texts. No voicemail. No email. The asshole was already 10 minutes late. If she showed up downstairs without any money, Terry was going to beat her ass. Again. He seemed to forget it was his job to screen these losers. Not that Terry ever took the blame for anything. She looked out the window at the downtown skyline. Zanna was born and raised in Roswell, half an hour and a lifetime away from Atlanta. Except for the buildings that had names on them, she had no idea what she was looking at. Equitable, AT&T, Georgia Power. All she knew was she was going to be seriously screwed if her John didn't show. The plasma TV on the wall flashed on. Zanna had rolled over on the remote. She saw Monica Pearson behind the news desk. Some girl was missing. White, blonde, pretty. They sure as shit wouldn't care if Zanna was gone. She flipped around the channels, trying to find something more interesting, finally giving up when she got into the triple digits. She tossed the remote onto the bedside table. Her arms itched. She wanted a cigarette. She wanted more than that. If she thought about the meth long enough, she could taste the powder in the back of her throat. Her freaking nose was rotting from the inside, but she couldn't stop snorting the stuff. Couldn't stop thinking about the smash cut to her brain. The way it shook through her body. The way it made the world so much more bearable. That wasn't going to happen for at least an hour. To tide herself over, she went to the minibar and took out 4 small bottles of vodka. Zanna downed them in quick succession, then filled the empties in the bathroom sink. She was stacking the bottles back in the refrigerator when there was a knock at the door. "Thank Jesus," she groaned. She checked herself in the mirror. Not too bad. She could still pass for 16 if the lights were turned down low enough. She twisted the wand to close the blinds and turned off one of the bedside lamps before answering the door. The man was massive. The top of his head almost touched the doorway. His shoulders were nearly as wide as the frame. Zanna felt a stir of panic. But then she remembered Terry was downstairs, and that he had cleared this guy, and that whatever was about to happen wouldn't matter when the first huff of meth snaked into her brain. She said, "Hey, Daddy," because he was older. Zanna didn't want to think about the geezer using his social security check to pay for this. She looked at his face, which was pretty smooth considering his age. His neck was a little scrawny. You could really tell it in his hands, liver spots. The hair on his arms was white, though what was left on his head was sandy brown. Zanna threw open the door. "Come in, big boy." She tried to swing her hips as she walked, but the carpet, combined with her new high heels, wasn't a good mix. She ended up having to brace herself against the wall. She turned around and waited for him to come in. He took his time. He didn't seem nervous, and God knew you didn't pop your first whore at his age. He glanced up and down the hallway before finally shutting the door behind him. He was still in good shape despite the years on him. His hair was in a military cut, his shoulders were square. World War II, she thought. Then her middle school history came back to her, and Xana figured he wasn't old enough for that. Probably Vietnam. A lot of her customers lately were young guys, just back from Afghanistan. She didn't know which was worse, the sad ones who tried to make love, or the angry ones who wanted to hurt her. She got straight to the point. "You a cop?" He said what they always said.
"Do I look like a cop?"
But he unzipped his pants without prompting. It was the last vestige of democracy. Even undercover, a cop wasn't allowed to show you his junk.
"All right."
Xana nodded, suppressing a shudder. He was huge.
"Damn," she managed. "That looks fun."
The man zipped back up.
"Have a seat."
He indicated the chair. Xana sat, legs apart, so he'd have a good view from the bed. Only he kept standing. His shadow stretched across the room, nearly reaching the edge of the door.
"How do you like it?"
she asked, though Xana had a sneaking suspicion he liked it rough. She pulled in her shoulders, tried to look smaller than she already was.
"You want to be gentle with me? I'm just a girl."
His lips quivered, but that was the only reaction she got. He asked,
"How did you get here?"
She thought he meant the literal path she'd taken, up peach tree left on Edgewood. Then she realized he meant her current state of employment. Xana shrugged.
"What can I say? I love sex."
That's what they wanted to hear. That's what they tried to tell themselves when they ripped you apart and threw money in your face, that you loved it, couldn't live without it.
"No," he said. "I want the real story."
"Oh, you know." She blew out a puff of air. Her story was so boring. You couldn't turn on the television without seeing some iteration of the same. Xana hadn't been tossed out on the streets. She hadn't been abused. Her parents were divorced, but they were good people. The problem was Xana. She'd started smoking weed so a boy would think she was cool. She'd started taking pills because she was bored. She'd started smoking meth to lose weight. And then it was too late to do anything else but hang on by her fingernails until the next hit. Her mom let her live at home until she figured out Xana was smoking more than Marlboros. Her dad let her live in his basement until his new wife found the blackened pieces of tinfoil that smelled like marshmallows. Then they put her up in an apartment. Then they got all tough love, and two failed stints in rehab later, Xana was out on the street, earning her fix between her legs.
"Tell me the truth," the man said. "How did you get here?"
Xana tried to swallow. Her mouth was dry. She couldn't tell if it was from withdrawal or from the scary feeling she was getting off this guy. She told him what she knew he wanted to hear.
"My daddy hurt me." "I'm sorry to hear that."
"I didn't have a choice." She sniffed and looked down at the floor. She used the back of her hand to wipe away fake tears. Her jaw could have come unhinged like a boa constrictor's, so bored was Xana with spinning this story.
"I didn't have anywhere to go. I was sleeping on the streets. Sex is something I like, and I'm good at it, so..."
He kneeled down to look at her. Even on his knees, he was taller than her. Xana glanced at him, then quickly looked away. It was shame this guy was looking for. Older generation, they lapped it up. Xana could give him plenty of shame. Valerie Bertinelli, Meredith Baxter, Tori Spelling. Xana had seen the look in every single Lifetime movie she'd ever watched. She said,
"I miss him. That's the sad part."
She looked back up at the man, blinked her eyes a few times.
"I miss my daddy."
He took her hand, gently sandwiching it between both of his. Xana couldn't see anything but her wrist. His touch was light on her skin, but she felt like he'd trapped her. Her breath stuttered in her chest. Panic was a natural instinct she thought she'd learned to control. There was something about this man that set off what little warning system she had left. He said, "Susanna, don't lie to me." Bile boiled up into her mouth. "That's not my name." She tried to pull away, his fingers clamped around her wrist. "I didn't tell you my name."
"Didn't you?"
She was going to kill that fucking pimp. He'd sell his mother for an extra 20.
"What did Terry tell you? My name is Trixie."
"No," the man insisted.
"You told me your name is Susanna."
She felt pain rush up her arm. She looked down. He held both her wrists in one hand. He leaned into her legs, trapping her against the chair.
"Don't fight,"
he said, his free hand wrapping around her neck. The tips of his fingers touched in the back.
"I want to help you, Susanna. To save you."
I'm not...
She couldn't speak. She was choking. She couldn't breathe. Panic jerked through her body like a live wire. Her eyes rolled upward. She felt a stream of urine dribble down her leg.
"Just relax, sister."
He hovered above her, his eyes going back and forth as if he did not want to miss a second of her fear. A smile creased his lips.
"The Lord will guide my hand."
6. Present day. Monday. Sarah walked through the Grady Hospital emergency room, trying not to get pulled away on cases. Even if she tattooed "off-duty" on her forehead, the nurses wouldn't leave her alone. She shouldn't blame them. The hospital was notoriously understaffed and overburdened. There had not been a time in Grady's 120-year history when supply was able to keep up with demand. Working here was tantamount to signing away your life, which had been just what Sarah needed when she'd taken the job. She hadn't really had a life back then. She was newly widowed, living in a different city, starting over from scratch. Throwing herself into a demanding job was the only way she'd been able to cope. It was amazing how quickly her needs had changed in the last 2 weeks. Or the last hour, for that matter. Sarah had no idea what was going on between Will and Amanda. Their relationship had always puzzled her, but the exchange in the hallway before the stairs collapsed had been downright bizarre. Even after the fall, when it was clear that Amanda had been badly injured, Will seemed more intent on questioning the woman than helping her. Sarah still felt shocked by his tone of voice. She'd never heard such coldness from him before. It was like he was another person. A stranger she did not want to know. At least Sarah had finally figured out the root of their conversation, though it was through no brilliant deduction of her own. The television over the nurse's station was always tuned to the news. Closed captioning scrolled mindlessly day and night. The missing girl from Georgia Tech had made the jump to the national news, courtesy of CNN, whose world headquarters was just down the street from the university. The video of Amanda leading the press conference played on an endless loop, reporters flashing up statistics and the sort of non-information required to fill 24-hour programming. The latest speculation held that perhaps Ashley Renee Snyder had faked her own abduction. Students claiming to be close friends of the missing girl had come forward, giving details about her life, Ashley's fears that her grades were slipping. Maybe she really was hiding somewhere. The theory was not completely without foundation. Georgia had a short history of women pretending to be kidnapped, the most famous being the so-called runaway bride, a silly woman who'd wasted several days of police time hiding from her own fiancé.
"Sarah," a nurse rushed up with a lab report, "I need you to..."
"Sorry, I'm off duty."
"What the hell are you doing back here?" The woman didn't wait around for an answer.
Sarah checked the board to see if Will had been assigned a room. Generally, a case as mundane as sutures would take hours to get to. But before Sarah dealt with Amanda, she'd made certain the admitting nurse hadn't abandoned Will to the waiting room. He'd been assigned one of the curtains in the back.
Sarah felt her spine stiffen when she saw Bert Krakauer's name instead of her own adjacent to Will's. She headed toward the back, a startling sense of ownership quickening her pace. The curtain was open, Will was sitting up in bed. A drape was around his foot. Worst of all, Krakauer had a pair of pickups in his hand. "No, no, no," she said, jogging toward the two men. "What are you doing?" Krakauer indicated the needle holder.
"They didn't let you play with these in medical school?"
Sarah gave him a tight smile. "Thanks, I'll take over from here." He took the hint, returning the instrument to the tray and taking his leave. Sarah gave Will a sharp look as she closed the curtain. "You were going to let Krakauer sew you up?"
"Why not?"
"For the same reason you weren't left rotting in the waiting room." Sarah washed her hands at the sink. "If someone broke into my apartment, would you let another cop investigate it?"
"I don't normally work burglaries."
Sarah wiped her hands dry with a paper towel. Will wasn't normally this obtuse. "What's going on?"
"He said I need stitches."
"Not that." She sat down on the edge of the bed. "You've been acting strange since we got here. Is it Amanda?"
"Why? Did she say something to you?"
Sarah had a creeping sense of deja vu. She'd spoken briefly to Amanda and gotten the same question about Will. "What would Amanda tell me?"
"Nothing important. She wasn't making a lot of sense."
"She seemed pretty sharp to me." Sarah resisted the urge to put her hands on her hips like a lecturing schoolmarm. "I saw Ashley Snyder on the news." Will sat up.
"Did they find her?"
"No. They're speculating that she might have staged her own kidnapping. One of her friends came forward and said she was about to flunk out of school." Will nodded, but didn't offer his opinion. "Are you working the case?"
"Nope."
His tone was clipped.
"Still keeping Atlanta's airport toilets safe from horny business travelers."
"Why aren't you on the kidnapping?"
"You'd have to ask Amanda."
Here they were, full circle again.
"Is she all right?"
Will asked, though the question seemed obligatory.
"Amanda, I mean."
Sarah had never been good at staring contests, especially with someone as blatantly pig-headed as the man she'd been sleeping with for the last 2 weeks. "She has what's called Colley's fracture. Ortho is reducing it right now. She'll get a cast. She's pretty banged up, but she'll be okay. Normally she'd be sent home, but she lost consciousness, so she'll have to spend the night."
"Good."
He stared at her blankly. Sarah got the feeling that she might as well be talking to a brick wall. The tension between them was just as thick. She took his hand. "Will,
thanks for letting me know."
Sarah waited for him to say more. Then she realized they only had 12 hours before it would be too late to suture his ankle. She slipped on a pair of surgical gloves. She could tell from the mess that Krakauer had already cleaned out the wound. "Your ankle is numb?" Will nodded. "Let's see what we have." She pressed her fingers around the open skin. The laceration was at least an inch long and half as deep. Fresh blood wept out when she forced together the skin. She asked, "You didn't think to tell me that a nail went into your ankle?"
"The other doctor said it barely needs a stitch."
"The other doctor is never going to have to see your ankle again." Sarah rolled over the stool so she could sit down. She took the scalpel and used the edge to shape the jagged opening into an ellipse. "I'll make sure there isn't a scar."
"You know that doesn't matter."
Sarah looked up at him. There were worse scars on his body. It was something they didn't talk about. One of the many things they didn't talk about. She tried again. "What's going on with you?" Will shook his head, looking away. He was obviously still angry, but Sarah had no idea why. There was no use asking him. As sweet and kind and gentle as Will Trent was, Sarah had learned that he was about as forthcoming as an amnesiac with lockjaw. She didn't know what else to do but start suturing. Her glasses were in her purse, which she assumed was still locked inside her car. Sarah leaned in close and hooked the needle into the flesh just beneath Will's skin. The chromic thread dipped in and out as she placed a single row of interrupted sutures. Pull, not cut. Pull, not cut.
Over the years, Sarah's hands had performed this same action so many times that she went into autopilot, which, unfortunately, gave her mind plenty of time to wander. The same question she'd been asking herself for the last 2 weeks popped into her head. What was she doing? She liked Will. He was the first man Sarah had really been with since her husband had died. She enjoyed his company. He was funny and smart, handsome, incredibly good in bed. He'd met her family. Her dogs adored him. Sarah adored his dog. Over the last few weeks, Will had practically moved into her apartment. But in some ways, he still felt like a stranger. What little he revealed about his past always came in sugar-coated sound bites. Nothing was ever too bad. No one was that horrible. To hear Will tell it, he'd lived a charmed life. Never mind the cigarette and electrical burns on his body. The jag to his upper lip where the skin had been busted in two. The deep gouge that followed his jawline. Sarah kissed these places and rubbed her hands along them as if they didn't exist. Halfway there. Sarah glanced up at Will again. He was still looking away. She tied off the last knot and picked up a new needle threaded with proline. She started the running subcuticular row, zigzagging the thread back and forth, all the while berating herself for giving in to Will's silence. When the relationship first started, none of this had mattered. There were far more interesting things Will could do with his mouth other than talk about himself. These last few days, his reticence had started to bother her. Sarah found herself wondering if he was capable of giving more, and failing that, if she was willing to settle for less. Even if by some miracle he decided to pour out his heart to Sarah, there was still the larger problem of his wife. If Sarah was being honest, she was afraid of Angie Pulaski, and not just because the woman kept leaving nasty notes on the windshield of Sarah's car. Angie lingered in Will's life like a vaporous poison. The joy that Sarah felt as Will showed her around in his old neighborhood had quickly dissipated when practically every memory he recalled had something to do with Angie. He didn't have to say her name. Sarah knew that he was thinking about her. Which left Sarah questioning whether or not there was any space in Will's life for someone other than Angie Pulaski. There. Sarah pulled closed the skin and knotted the loop. These need to stay in for 2 weeks. I've got some waterproof band-aids at home so you can shower. I'll get you some Tylenol for the pain. I've got some at home. He stared at his hands as he rolled down the leg of his pants. I should probably stay there tonight. He slid on his sock, still not meeting her eyes. I need to wash some of my shirts, do the laundry, check on the dog. Sarah stared openly. Will's jaw was clenched. He was a study in controlled anger. She wasn't sure if this was directed solely at Amanda anymore. Are you mad at me? No. The answer was short, quick, and obviously a lie. All right. Sarah turned her back to him as she snapped off her gloves. She tossed them into the trash can, then started cleaning up the suture kit. Behind her, she could hear Will moving around, probably looking for his shoe. Sarah normally had a long fuse, but her bad day had made it considerably shorter. She reached under the bed and grabbed his shoe out of the basket. She asked, "Do me a favor, sweetheart." He took his time answering. "What?" "Don't talk about what happened tonight, all right?" She tossed the shoe in his general direction. He caught it with one hand, which only served to irritate her more. "Don't tell me what you think about Amanda, or the hammer, or what she was doing at the place where you grew up when she's supposed to be leading a case. And sure as hell, let's not talk about whatever she said to you in the basement that has you so freaked out that you're emotionally catatonic. At least, more than usual." Sarah stopped for a breath. "Let's just ignore everything, okay?" He stared at her for a few seconds, then said, "That sounds like an excellent idea." Will shoved his foot into his shoe. "I'll see you later." "You bet." Sarah looked down at the digital tablet as if she could actually read the words. Her fingers pressed random keys. She felt Will hesitate a moment, Then he yanked back the curtain. His shoes snicked on the floor. Sarah kept her head down, counting silently. When she reached 60, she looked up. He was gone. "Asshole," Sarah hissed. She slid the tablet onto the counter. Earlier, she'd felt tired, but now she was too wired to be anything but furious. She washed her hands. The water was hot enough to scald her skin, but she just scrubbed harder. There was a mirror over the sink. Her hair was a mess. Specks of dried blood dotted her sleeve. This was the first night she'd come straight home in her work clothes. For the last 2 weeks, she'd been showering at the hospital, changing into a dress or something more flattering, before seeing Will. Was that part of the problem? Maybe the Amanda thing was another issue. There was an earlier moment on the street when Will had looked down at her. Sarah had felt him taking in her scrubs, her hair, with a less-than-impressed expression. Will was always impeccably dressed. Maybe he was thinking that Sarah hadn't made much of an effort. Or maybe it went back further than that. He'd found her crying in her car. Was that what set him off? If so, why had he taken her to the children's home? The fact that he would share something so personal had made Sarah feel as if their relationship was finally moving forward. And here they were again, tripping over their feet as they took giant leaps back. "Hey, you." Faith stood at the open curtain. Will's partner held her 5-month-old daughter on one shoulder and a large diaper bag on the other. "What's going on?" Sarah cut straight to the point. "Do I look bad?" "You're half a foot taller than me and 10 pounds lighter. Do you really want to make me answer that question?" "Fair enough." Sarah held out her hands for Emma. "May I?" Faith kept the baby on her shoulder. "Trust me, you don't want to be anywhere near this thing. I'm going to have to slap a hazmat sticker on her diaper." The smell was pungent, but Sarah took the baby anyway. It was a nice change to hold a healthy child in her arms. "I guess you're here to see Amanda." Sarah's husband had been a cop. She'd learned the rules long ago. If one of them was in the hospital, they were all in the hospital. "You just missed Will." "I'm surprised he showed up. He hates this place." Faith took a diaper and some wipes out of her bag. "Do you know what happened to Amanda?" "She fell on her wrist. She'll be in a cast for a while, but she's fine." Sarah laid Emma down on the bed. Faith probably assumed Sarah was working a shift. This was one of the problems with Will's myriad secrets. Sarah found herself keeping them on his behalf. There was no way to tell Faith what had happened to Amanda without revealing why Sarah had been there. "Right on schedule," Faith indicated a group of older women who were clustered at the nurse's station. Except for a striking African-American woman wearing a pink scarf around her neck, they were all dressed in monochromatic pantsuits and sporting the same short haircuts and ramrod straight spines. "The good old gals," Faith explained. "Mom and Roz are already in with Amanda. I'm sure they'll be spinning war stories until the crack of dawn." Sarah wiped down Emma. The baby squirmed. Sarah tickled her stomach. "How's it going with your mom in the house?" "You mean, do I want to strangle her yet?" Faith sat down on the stool. "I get maybe 10 minutes, tops, every morning before Emma wakes up and I have to get her fed and ready, and then get myself fed and ready, and then my whole day starts, and I'm at work, and the phone is ringing, and I'm talking to idiots who are lying to me, and it's not until the next morning when I get that 10 minutes to myself again." Faith paused, giving Sarah a meaningful look. "Mom's up at 5 o'clock every morning. I hear her poking around downstairs, and I smell coffee and eggs, and then I go down to the kitchen, and she's all cheery and chatty and wants to talk about what she's got planned for the day, and what she saw on the news last night, and do I want her to cook me something for breakfast, and what do I want for supper, and I swear to God, Sarah, I'm going to end up killing her, I really am. I have a mother, too. I completely understand." Sarah slid a new diaper under the baby. Emma's feet kicked up as she tried to turn over. "What are you doing while Will's working at the airport?" "I thought you knew." "Knew what?" "Amanda assigned him to toilet duty, so my days are free to take Mom to her physical therapy appointments." Faith shrugged. "You know, it's not the first time Mom or Amanda's bent the rules for each other." "Amanda's not punishing Will because of his hair?"
What's wrong with his hair? It looks great.
Yet again, Will's ability to read women was pitch perfect. I don't understand that relationship.
Amanda and Will? Or Will in the world?
Either. Both. Sarah buttoned up the onesie. She stroked her fingers along Emma's face. The baby smiled, showing two tiny white specks where her first pair of teeth were breaking through the bottom gum. Emma's eyes tracked Sarah's fingers as they waved back and forth.
She's starting to be a real person.
She's been laughing at me a lot lately. I'm trying not to take it personally. Sarah put Emma on her shoulder. The baby's arm looped around her neck.
How long has Will been working for Amanda?
As far as I know, he's followed her around his whole career. Hostage negotiation, narcotics, special crimes.
Is that normal to stay with one boss your entire career?
Not really. Cops are like cats. They'd rather change owners than change houses.
Sarah couldn't imagine Will asking to be transferred along with Amanda. He seldom sang her praises, and for Amanda's part, she seemed to delight in torturing him.
Then again, if Will had one overriding characteristic, it was his resistance to change, which fact Sarah should probably take as a warning.
Okay, my turn for questions. Faith crossed her arms. Here's the big one. When are you going to grab him by the short hairs and tell him to get a fucking divorce?
Sarah managed to smile.
It's very tempting.
Then why don't you?
Because ultimatums never work, and I don't want to be the reason he leaves his wife.
He wants to leave her.
Sarah didn't state the obvious. If Will really wanted to be divorced, then he would be divorced.
Faith hissed air through her teeth.
You probably shouldn't take advice from a woman who's never been married and has one kid in college and another in diapers.
Sarah laughed. Don't sell yourself short.
Well, it's not like the good guys are lining up to date a cop, and I'm certainly not attracted to the type of useless asshole who'd want to marry a female police officer.
Sarah couldn't argue with her. Not many men possessed the temperament for dating a woman who could arrest them.
Does Will talk to you?
Faith amended.
I mean, about himself. Has he told you anything?
Some. Sarah felt unreasonably guilty, as if it was her own fault that Will was so closed off.
We just started seeing each other.
I've got this long list of questions in my head, Faith admitted. Like, what happened to his parents? Where did he go when he aged out of the system? How did he manage college? How did he get into the GBI?
She studied Sarah, who just shrugged.
Statistically, kids in state care have an 80% chance of getting arrested before they turn 21. 60% of them end up staying inside.
Sounds about right.
Sarah had seen this scenario play out again and again with her kids in the ER. One day she was treating them for an earache. The next day, they were handcuffed to a gurney awaiting transport to jail. Will's transcendence of this soul-killing pattern was one of the things that she most admired about him. He had succeeded despite the odds. Which, Sarah was fairly certain, Will would not want her discussing with Faith. She changed the subject.
Are you working this Ashley Snyder case?
I wish, Faith said. Though I don't see there's much hope. It hasn't broken on the news yet, but she's been missing for a while, and those so-called friends of hers who are hogging the camera have no idea.
How long?
Since before spring break.
That was last week.
The ER had seen a resulting spike in alcohol poisoning and drug-induced psychosis.
No one noticed she was gone?
Her parents thought she went to the Redneck Riviera. Her friends thought she was with her parents. Her roommate waited 2 days to report her missing. She thought Ashley had met a guy and didn't want to get her in trouble.
So there's no chance she's faking it.
There was a lot of blood in her bedroom. On the pillow, the carpet.
The roommate didn't think that was odd.
My son's that age. They're professionally obtuse. I doubt a spaceship landing on his forehead would strike him as odd.
Faith returned to their earlier conversation.
Can you look at Will's medical records?
Sarah felt caught out by the question.
Faith added, His juvenile files are sealed. Trust me, I've tried. But there has to be something at Grady from when he was a kid.
A deep blush worked its way up Sarah's chest and face. She'd actually considered this once.
but common sense had won out.
It's illegal for me to access anyone's records without their permission. Besides,
Sarah stopped talking. She wasn't being completely honest. She'd made it, as far as the records department. One of the secretaries had pulled Will's patient chart. Sarah hadn't touched the file, but the name on the label listed him as Wilbur Trent. Will's license gave his legal name as William Trent. Sarah had seen it the other night when he'd opened his wallet to pay for dinner. So why had Amanda called him Wilbur?
Hello? Faith snapped her fingers.
You in there?
Sorry, I zoned out. Sarah shifted Emma onto her other shoulder.
She tried to remember what they'd been talking about.
I'm not going to spy on him.
That, at least, was the truth. Sarah wanted to know about Will because they were lovers, not because she was writing a salacious exposé.
He'll tell me when he's ready.
Good luck with that, Faith said. Meanwhile, if you find out anything good, let me know.
Sarah chewed her lip as she stared at Faith. The overwhelming urge to strike a bargain started to well up from deep inside. Amanda showing up at the children's home, the hammer, Will's unexplained anger, his sudden desire to be alone.
Faith was whip smart. She'd worked as a homicide detective on the Atlanta police force before becoming a special agent with the GBI. She'd been Will's partner for 2 years. Faith's mother was one of Amanda's oldest friends. If Sarah shared what had happened at the children's home tonight, maybe Faith could help Sarah put together the clues.
And then Will really would be lost to her forever.
Faith, Sarah began, I'm glad we're friends. I like you a lot. But I can't talk about Will behind his back. He has to always know I'm on his side.
She took it better than Sarah expected.
You're far too healthy to be in a relationship with a cop, especially Will. The thought occurred to Sarah that they might not even be in a relationship anymore. But she said, thank you for understanding.
Faith waved to an older woman who was standing at the nurse's station. No pantsuit. She was dressed in jeans and a flowery blouse. But there was the unmistakable air of a police officer about her. It was the way she looked around the room, noting the good guys, singling out the possible bad ones. The woman waved at Faith, checked the patient board, then escorted herself toward Amanda's room.
She trained with Mossad after 9/11, Faith provided. 2 kids, 3 grandkids, divorced 5 times, twice from the same man, and did it all without ever wearing a pantsuit.
Faith sounded reverential. She's my role model.
Sarah cradled Emma so she could look at her face. There was a soft, powdery scent coming off her, a mixture of baby wipes and sweat.
Your mom's a pretty good role model, too.
We're too different, Faith shrugged. Mom's quiet, methodical, always in charge, and I'm, oh my God, we're all going to die.
The evaluation was strange coming from a woman who kept a loaded shotgun in the trunk of her car.
Sarah said, I feel safe knowing you're with Will.
Faith would never know what kind of compliment Sarah had paid her.
You're pretty good under fire.
Once I stopped freaking out, she pointed toward Amanda's room.
You could blow up a bomb right now, and as soon as the dust cleared, all of them would still be right there, guns drawn, ready to fight the bad guys.
Sarah had seen Amanda in some tough situations. She didn't doubt it one bit.
Mom told me when they joined up, the first question on the polygraph was about their sex lives. Were they virgins? If not, how many men had they been with? Was it more than one? Was it less than 3?
Is that legal?
Anything's legal if you can get away with it.
She grinned.
They asked Mom if she was joining the force so she could have sex with policemen. She told them it depended on what the policeman looked like.
Sarah asked, what about Amanda? The fall in the basement had her recalling her early days on the force.
Maybe there was a reason.
Was she always a cop?
Far as I know.
She never worked for Children's Services.
Faith narrowed her eyes. Sarah could practically see her detective's brain click on.
What are you getting at?
Sarah kept her attention on Emma.
I was just curious. Will hasn't told me much about her.
He wouldn't, Faith said, as if she needed reminding. I grew up with Amanda. She dated my uncle for years, but the idiot never asked her to marry him. She never got married? Had kids? She can't have children. I know she tried, but it wasn't in the cards. Sarah kept her gaze on Emma. There was one thing she shared with Amanda Wagner. It wasn't the kind of club you bragged about belonging to. Faith said, Can you imagine her as a mother? You'd be better off with Casey Anthony. Emma hiccuped. Sarah rubbed her tummy. She smiled at Faith, wishing, longing to talk to her, but knowing she could not. Sarah had not felt this cut off in a long while. Of course, she could always call her mother, but Sarah wasn't up for a lecture about right and wrong, especially because Sarah could clearly see the difference, which made her less the subject of a torrid love affair and more like a woman who had resigned herself to being a doormat. Because that was exactly what Kathy Linton would say. Why are you giving a man everything when he won't or can't give you anything in return? Faith asked, Was that you or Emma? Sarah realized she'd grunted. Me. I just figured out my mother was right about something. God, I hate when that happens. Faith sat up straight. Speaking of... Evelyn Mitchell was standing by the nurse's station. The woman was cut from the same cloth as her friends, matching pantsuit, trim figure, perfect posture, even though she couldn't stand without crutches. She was obviously looking for her daughter. Faith reluctantly stood. Duty calls. Her feet dragged the floor as she headed toward the nurse's station. Sarah held up Emma and touched her nose to the baby's. Emma showed both rows of gums, squealing in delight. If there was any question about how good a mother Faith Mitchell was, one need only look at her happy baby. Sarah kissed Emma's cheeks. The little girl giggled. A few more kisses, and she started snorting. Her feet kicked in the air. Sarah kissed her again. His what? Faith shouted. Her voice echoed through the ER. Both mother and daughter stared openly at Sarah. From this distance, they could have been twins, both around the same weight and height, both with blonde hair and a familiar set to their shoulders. Faith's expression was troubled, and Evelyn's was as inscrutable as usual. The older woman said something, and Faith nodded before heading toward Sarah. Sorry. Faith held out her hands for Emma. I need to go. Sarah passed her the baby. Is everything okay? I don't know. Is it Ashley Snyder? No. Yes. Faith's mouth opened again, then closed. Obviously there was something wrong. Faith didn't shock easily, and Evelyn Mitchell wasn't one to casually dole out information. Sarah said, Faith, you're scaring me. Is Will all right? I don't... She stopped herself. I can't. Again, she stopped. Her lips pressed together in a thin white line. Finally, she said, You were right, Sarah. Some things we have to keep separate. For the second time that night, a person keeping a secret turned their back on Sarah and walked away. 7. July 11th, 1975. Friday. Amanda scanned through her women's studies textbook, marking the paragraphs she needed to know for her evening class. She was sitting in the passenger seat of Kyle Peterson's Plymouth Fury. The police radio was turned down low, but her ear had been trained long ago to tune out anything but the pertinent calls. She turned the page and started to read the next section. To understand the far-reaching effects of the sex-gender system, one must first deconstruct the phallic hypothesis in relation to the unconscious.
Brother, Amanda sighed. Whatever the hell that meant.
The car shook as Peterson turned over in the back seat. Amanda studied his reflection in the visor mirror, willing him not to wake. She'd already wasted nearly an hour this morning, slapping away his hands. Then another half hour had been consumed with apologies so that he would stop sulking. Thank God the flask in his pocket had been full enough to knock him out, or Amanda would have never found time to read her assignment. Not that she understood a word of it. Some of the passages were downright obscene. If these women were so eager to find out how their vaginas worked, they should start shaving their legs and find themselves husbands. The radio clicked. Amanda heard the in and out of a man's voice. There were pockets all over the city where the radios had little or no reception. But that wasn't the problem. A black officer was calling for backup, which meant the white officers were blocking the transmission by clicking the buttons on their mics. In the next hour, a white officer would call for help and the blacks would do the same. And then someone with the Atlanta Journal or Constitution would write an article wondering why there had been a recent spike in crime. Amanda checked on Peterson again. He'd started snoring. His mouth gaped open beneath his shaggy, untrimmed mustache. She read the next paragraph, then promptly forgot everything it said. Her eyes blurred from exhaustion. Or maybe it was irritation. If she never read the words gynococratic and patriarchy again, it would be too soon. Send Gloria Steinem to Techwood Homes and see if she still thought women could run the world. Techwood. Amanda felt the panic rising up like bile. The pimp's hand around her throat. The feel of his erection pressing against her. The scrape of his fingernails as he tried to pull down her hose. She gritted her teeth, willing her heart to settle. Deep breaths. In and out. Slow. One, two, three. She whispered off the seconds. Minutes passed before she was able to unclench her jaw and breathe normally again. Amanda had not seen Evelyn Mitchell in the 4 days since the awful ordeal. The other woman hadn't shown up for roll call. Her name wasn't on the roster. Even Vanessa couldn't find her. Amanda found herself hoping that Evelyn had come to her senses and gone back home to take care of her family. It was hard enough for Amanda to force herself out of bed every morning. She couldn't imagine the dread she'd feel leaving her family, knowing the sort of world into which she was thrusting herself. But then Evelyn wasn't the only officer who'd disappeared. The new sergeant, Luther Hodge, had been summarily transferred. His replacement was a white man named Hoyt Woody. He was from North Georgia, and his thick hill accent was made all the more unintelligible by the toothpick he kept in his mouth at all times. The tensions around the squad were still there, but they were the usual kind. Everyone was more comfortable with a known entity. At least Hodge's disappearance wasn't into thin air. Vanessa had made more phone calls, which revealed the sergeant had been transferred to one of the Model City precincts. Not only was it a downward move, it took him out of Amanda's circle. Unfortunately, she hadn't the nerve to go to Hodge's news station and ask him why they'd been sent to Techwood Homes on such a fool's errand. Not that Amanda wasn't capable of other useless errands. The last few days had been a test of her two warring sides. She longed to put the whole Techwood ordeal behind her, but her curiosity would not let it go. Her sleepless nights were not just filled with fear. They were filled with questions. Amanda wanted to think that her cop's curiosity had been piqued, but the honest truth was that she was coasting on nothing more than woman's intuition. The whore who was living in Kitty Treadwell's apartment had put the bug in Amanda's ear. Something wasn't right there. She could feel it in her bones. Which is why Amanda had done some poking around that had exacerbated her already frayed nerves. Stupid poking around that would probably get back to her father and land her in hot water, not just with Duke, but with the higher-ups in the police force. Amanda closed her textbook. And she especially hadn't the stomach to read Phyllis Schlafly's rebuttal to the Equal Rights Amendment. Amanda was sick and tired of being told how to live her life by women who never had to write their own rent checks. "What's the skinny?" Amanda jumped so hard she nearly slammed her book into her face. She shushed Evelyn Mitchell, then turned around to check on Peterson. "Sorry," Evelyn whispered. She put her hand on the door handle, but Amanda slammed down the lock. Evelyn stood outside the car, unmoved. "You know the window's down, right? Behind her, Vanessa Livingston giggled. Reluctantly, Amanda unlocked the door and got out of the car. She whispered, "What do you want?" Evelyn whispered back, "We're trading you for Nessa."
"No way."
The brass wouldn't care, but Amanda had no intention of ever partnering with Evelyn Mitchell again. She started to get back into the car. Evelyn caught her arm, and Vanessa squeezed past, slipping into the seat and carefully latching the door. Amanda stood in the empty parking lot, wanting to slap them both. Evelyn told Vanessa, "We'll be back in a few hours." "Take your time," Vanessa checked Peterson. "I don't think he's going anywhere." Evelyn used her finger to swipe the side of her nose, a la Robert Redford in The Sting. Vanessa did the same. "This is ridiculous," Amanda muttered, reaching into the car to retrieve her purse and textbook.
"Oh, cheer up," Evelyn said.
"Maybe we'll find some mud for you to stick in." Evelyn drove her Ford Falcon up North Avenue. The station wagon was now devoid of moving boxes and filled with various baby items. Except for the radio on the seat between them, there was nothing that would indicate a police officer drove this car. The vinyl seat felt sticky under Amanda's legs. As an only child with no cousins, she was seldom around children. Amanda could not help but think that Zeke Mitchell had secreted a vile substance onto the vinyl.
"Pretty day," Evelyn said. She had to be joking. The noontime sun was so intense that Amanda's eyes were watering.
She shielded her eyes from the glare. Evelyn reached into her purse and slipped on a pair of Foster Grants.
"I think I have another pair." She dug around in her bag.
"No, thank you."
Amanda had seen the same glasses at Richway. They cost at least $5.
"Suit yourself."
Evelyn zipped closed her purse. She drove like an old woman, slowing for yellow lights, letting anyone pass who showed the slightest desire. She kept one foot on the gas and one on the brake. By the time they pulled into the Varsity drive-in, Amanda was ready to grab the wheel and push her out of the car. Evelyn mumbled,
"Steady, Freddy."
With great concentration, she angled the Falcon into a parking spot close to the North Avenue entrance. The brakes squealed as she pumped the pedal, inching up slowly until she felt the tires bump against the barrier. Finally, Evelyn shifted the gear into park. The engine knocked when she turned off the ignition. The car shook. Evelyn turned in her seat, facing Amanda.
"Well, why did you bring me here? I couldn't possibly eat."
"I think I prefer when you're not speaking to me."
"Your wish is my command."
Amanda snapped back, but then she couldn't help herself.
"You almost got me raped."
Evelyn leaned back against the door. "In my defense, both of us were going to be raped." Amanda shook her head. The woman was incapable of taking anything seriously. Evelyn said, "We made it through okay."
"Spare me your positive energy."
Evelyn was silent. She turned back around. She kept her hands in her lap. Amanda stared straight ahead at the menu board. The words jumbled around senselessly. In her head, Amanda listed again all the things she had to do before she could go to sleep tonight. The more she thought about it, the harder the task seemed. She was too tired to do any of it. She was too tired to even be here.
"Damn, gal."
Evelyn's voice was deep, an approximation of the pimp's baritone.
"You a fine-looking woman."
Amanda gripped the textbook in her lap.
"Stop it."
Evelyn, as usual, was oblivious.
"You is fine."
Amanda turned her head away, leaning her chin on her hand.
"Please be quiet." "Gon' get me some of that hog tush."
"Oh, for God's sakes," Amanda sputtered.
"He didn't say that."
Her lips were trembling. But for the first time in 4 days, it wasn't because she was forcing back tears.
"Mm-hmm,"
Evelyn goaded, moving her hips obscenely into the seat.
"Fine-looking woman."
Amanda couldn't stop her lips from curving upward, and then she was laughing. There was no controlling it, even if she tried. Her mouth opened wide. She felt a lessening of pressure, not just from the sound, but from the release of air that had been trapped in her lungs like a poison. Evelyn was laughing too, which seemed the funniest part of all. Before long, they were both doubled over in their seats, tears streaming down their faces.
"Afternoon, ladies." The car hop was at Evelyn's window. His hat was rakishly tilted to the side. He slapped a number card on their windshield and smiled at them both as if he was in on the joke. "What do y'all have?"
Amanda wiped tears from her eyes. For the first time in days, she was hungry.
"Bring me a glorified steak and some strings, and a PC," Evelyn said.
"I'll have the same. Add a fried pie."
"Wait," Amanda called him back. "I'll have a fried pie, too."
Evelyn was still chuckling when he left.
"Oh, Lord,"
she sighed. She tilted the mirror and used the tip of her pinky finger to fix her eyeliner.
"Lord," she repeated. "I haven't been able to think about eating since..."
She didn't have to finish the sentence. Neither of them would have to finish that sentence ever again. Amanda asked,
"What did your husband say?"
"There are some things I don't share with Bill. He likes to think I'm Agent 99, hiding safely behind the scenes while Max Smart does all the real work." She gave a short laugh. "It's not too off the mark. You know, they never even say her name on that dumb show. She's just a number." Amanda didn't respond. It sounded like a chapter in her women's studies book.
Evelyn waited a beat.
"What did your father say?"
"I wouldn't be here if I'd told him."
Amanda picked at the edge of her book.
"Hodge got transferred to Model City."
"Where do you think I've been?" Amanda felt her jaw drop.
"They assigned you to Model City?"
"Hodge won't even talk to me. Every morning, first thing, I go into his office and I ask him what happened, who we ticked off, why he sent us to Techwood in the first place, and every day he tells me to get the hell out of his office."
Amanda couldn't help but be impressed by the other woman's brashness. "You think you're being punished?" she asked. "That can't be true. The brass didn't move me. I was there, same as you."
Evelyn seemed to have an opinion on the matter, but she kept it to herself. "The boys took care of that pimp for us."
Amanda felt her heart go into her throat. "You didn't tell anyone?"
"No, of course not, but you don't have to be Columbo to figure it out. A pimp, bleeding on the floor with his winky hanging out, and both of us looking like we're about to have heart attacks." She was right. At least Evelyn had saved them some face by managing to knock him out before the cavalry arrived. They let him out of jail long enough to get picked up again. Apparently, he resisted arrest. Up and down Ashby Street, ended up in the hospital.
Good. Maybe he learned his lesson.
Maybe, Evelyn said, sounding doubtful. He thought I'd just stand there while he raped you, waiting for my turn.
He's probably done it hundreds of times before. You saw how Jane was with him. She was terrified.
Evelyn nodded slowly. Dwayne Matheson. That's his name. He's been jammed up a couple of times for roughing up girls. He runs mostly white women. Tall blondes who used to be pretty. Goes by the name Juice.
Like the football player?
Except one's a Heisman winner and the other likes to beat on women. Evelyn tapped her finger against the textbook in Amanda's lap. This is surprising. She covered the book with her hands, embarrassed.
It's a required course.
Still, it's not a bad thing to know what's going on in other places. Amanda shrugged.
It won't change anything.
Don't you think it's kind of inevitable? Look at what happened to the Cullards. She indicated the restaurant. Nipsey Russell used to be a curb man here. And now, you can't turn on the TV without seeing his face. This was true enough. Amanda didn't know which infuriated her father more, seeing Russell on every game show, or finding Monica Kaufman, the new black anchor, on the Channel 2 News every evening. Evelyn said, Mayor Jackson's not doing such a bad job. Say what you will about Reggie, but the city hasn't burned down. Yet. The car hop was back with their food. He hooked the tray through Evelyn's window. Amanda reached for her purse. Evelyn said, I've got this.
I don't need you to.
Consider it buying your forgiveness.
It's going to take more than that.
Evelyn counted out the dollar bills and left what seemed like a very generous tip. What are you doing tomorrow? If her Saturday was like any other, Amanda would spend the day cleaning her father's house, then cleaning her own apartment, then while away the evening with Mary Tyler Moore, Bob Newhart, and Carol Burnett.
I hadn't thought about it.
Evelyn handed over her food. Why don't you come to my house? We're having a barbecue.
I'll have to check my schedule, Amanda managed, though she didn't think her father would approve. She was actually worried that he'd heard something.
Without prompting, he'd seen fit to warn her off Evelyn Mitchell every morning this week.
Thank you for the invitation, though.
Evelyn said, Well, let me know. I'd love for you to meet Bill. He's just... Her voice took on a dreamy quality. He's just the best. I know you'd like him.
Amanda nodded, unsure of what to say.
You date much?
All the time, she joked. Men just love it when they find out you're a cop. They loved it as they ran screaming for the door. I'm too busy to date right now anyway. I'm trying to finish my degree. There's just a lot going on.
Evelyn obviously saw right through her. Working around jerks like Peterson all day, you forget what a nice normal guy is like. She paused. There are some good ones out there. Don't let the Neanderthals get you down.
Mm-hmm.
Amanda put a french fry in her mouth, then another, until Evelyn did the same. They both ate in silence, sticking their cups on the dashboard, balancing the paper containers in their laps. For Amanda's part, the greasy french fries and hamburger were exactly what she needed. The iced chocolate milk was as sweet as a dessert, but she ate the fried pie anyway. By the time she was through, she felt slightly nauseated again, but this time it was overindulgence rather than fear turning her stomach. Evelyn transferred their empty containers back to the window tray. She put her hand to her stomach and groaned.
Mamma mia, that's a spicy meatball.
I put a new bottle of Alka-Seltzer in my purse this morning. Evelyn waved over the car hop and ordered 2 cups of water. I'm beginning to think you and I are a bad influence on each other. Amanda's eyelids dipped into a lengthy blink.
This is the first time I've ever wanted to be in the car with Peterson so I could lay down and go to sleep.
You'd wake up with him on top of you. Evelyn tugged at the back of her hair. She was silent a few seconds, then asked, Say, why do you think Hodge sent us to Techwood? Not for the first time, Amanda felt the danger behind her question. It was clear that someone very high up was pulling strings. Both Evelyn and Hodge had been transferred. There was no telling what would happen to Amanda, especially if anyone found out what she'd been doing. Evelyn prodded. Come on, girl, I know you've been thinking about it.
Well,
Amanda tried to make herself stop there, but she continued.
The guy in the blue suit bothers me, and not just because he's a lawyer.
I know what you mean, Evelyn agreed. He walked into the station like he owned it. He yelled at Hodge. You don't get to do that to a cop, even if you're white and in a fancy blue suit.
Hodge called him by name. That's what he said during roll call. Mr. Treadwell, we can talk in my office.
And then they went into the office, and Treadwell started ordering him around right off the bat. Evelyn, you're missing the point. Think about what you told me before. Andrew Treadwell, Sr., has friends in high places. He had his picture in the paper with Mayor Jackson. He worked on the campaign. Why would he reach out to a lowly sergeant with no pull who's only been in charge for less than an hour? She nodded. Okay, you're right. Keep going. Treadwell Price specializes in construction law. Andrew Sr. is negotiating all those contracts for the new subway system nobody wants. How'd you hear that?
I went down to the newspaper and looked through some of the back issues.
They let you do that? Amanda shrugged.
My dad worked on that kidnapping case last year.
An editor from the paper had been held for $1 million ransom. One of Duke's last official duties was transporting the money from the CNS vault to the drop location.
I told them who I was and they let me look through the archives.
Your father doesn't know you were there.
Of course not. Duke would have been livid that Amanda hadn't cleared it with him first. He'd ask me what I was up to. I didn't want to open that can of worms. Phew. Evelyn leaned her head back against the seat.
What you found out is certainly interesting. Anything else?
Amanda hesitated again.
Come on, darling, you can't be a little pregnant.
Amanda sighed to make her reluctance known. She had a sneaking suspicion she was just stirring up trouble. The man who was talking to Hodge isn't Treadwell Jr. According to the newspaper, Treadwell Sr. has one child, a daughter.
Evelyn sat up again. Named Kitty? Or Catherine? Kate?
Eugenia Louise. And she's at...